When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bingetown, how we feeling today? It's your boy Dave, and I am joined by fellow Bingetown co-hosts Brian and Kyle. And after a busy week, we are finally returning with our coverage of Netflix's live-action Avatar: The Last Airbender. Today's recording, we'll be discussing episodes 5 and 6, titled Spirited Away and The Mask. Just to start, on my thoughts, still not totally sold on this live action. I think we got the announcement yesterday, it was, that this has been greenlit for 2 more seasons, which we'll talk about at the end of the podcast on how we're going to probably tackle those based on how we're feeling about this season. But we'll get there at the very end of the discussion. But either way, I still think the combination of 5 and 6 was probably the best. So I said that about 3 and 4 being better than 1 and 2. I think 5 and 6 were still, as a grouping, better than 3 and 4. Still not a total positive. I think that, I know I'm repeating myself here, but I think they're doing a good job of blending storylines together. I will applaud them for that. Some of the characters are doing it for me, like Zuko, Sokka, but still plenty of complaints to have. And personally, about this Blue Spirit episode, it's one of my favorite episodes in all of the animated show. And I think the portrayal of what they did in the live action here was actually pretty good. So I won't go into too much beyond that, other than 5 and 6 were probably my favorite so far, but that's still not saying that I'm over the moon about this. But we'll get to the negatives of the episode, but let's just hear what Kyle and B-Toms have to say on their thoughts of these 2 episodes.
Yeah, I'll take that. I think it's just a lot of ups and a lot of downs. Yeah. I will agree with you. Probably 5 and 6 are my favorite duo of episodes thus far, but I'm probably still hanging out around a 5 out of 10. Mm-hmm. For me, the acting is probably head to toe as best as it's been so far. But I think these 2 episodes, there were a lot of big narrative decisions that they strayed from the source material in a way that I really didn't like, or at least it's questionable for me. So for that reason, yeah, just still hot and cold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's things to like. There's a lot of things to not like. I don't want to sound overly negative, but this is just not for me. I almost want to say that if we were not doing the podcast, I don't know if I would finish the season. I'm like, there's a part of me that's definitely interested in seeing the ending and how they're adapting things. I'm just like, I think it's difficult for me to watch the show and not feel like the, let's say, maybe the weight or the impact of my disappointment when I'm looking at things. I think I have to like keeping reminding myself to not be like, have this negative lens that I'm trying to view the show through. That's just where I'm at. I won't be overly negative. I will not be like that on the podcast, but that's just, I'm just not in love.
Hey, I get it, man. Since our last recording, I think I had started the animated show, I was probably halfway through season 1, and here we are at our next recording and I'm halfway through the final season. So
yeah,
tells you how much more I'm just excited to watch the animated show than in the live action. So it's been, the animated show is just so good. But as usual, how we're going to cover this recording is just big buckets of story. We're not going to cover scene by scene. So to start off on episode 5, I think what we're going to do is we're just going to cover pretty much all of the events of Team Avatar and what they're up to. So we can start, at least in the first half of Team Avatar's grouping, with just them arriving at this village. I didn't even write it down. I don't know if it was given us a name. The only name I have is Shiyoung, who is the child of one of the villagers at the burnt forest that we see here and we're all familiar with from the animated show. So any thoughts on at least the introduction to the forest, burnt forest, and any emotional feelings there?
Now, I think it was pretty boilerplate. They're taking the broad strokes of how we get into this Heibei spirit world story. I do like that they kept the Fire Nation burnt it down, and that's what gets them to talk to the villagers. However, we start to stray in how Heibei is terrorizing the villagers. And of course, the biggest difference is that Aang finally meditates, goes into the spirit world, and takes Sokka and Katara with him. So... but I would be remiss if I didn't say they slipped in the Pippin Papsicopoulos when Sokka is handing the girl her doll. There were some cool bending scenes, too, when they're running away from the firebenders. They're trying to show us Katara is getting better. But for the most part, we get into the spirit world more or less the same as in the animated.
Yeah, I like how they mentioned... or at least explore the idea that she's learning from other types of benders.
Yes.
Like that's a big theme. I mean, Zuko especially, obviously, as we get farther in the series because of Iroh's teachings himself. But this just always such a cool, been such a cool part of the show is how to kind of interact with the different disciplines and how you can learn from other benders and things like that. So that was definitely cool. I agree, B-Tums.
That was my biggest takeaway from these introductory scenes, for me at least, is it was never mentioned, I don't think, in the animated show, at least from my remembering of the rewatch, that Katara learned some moves from the Earthbenders. I don't think it's ever explicitly said, but when I'm watching the animated show, you do see Earthbenders, you know, summon pallets of rocks, and then they break those rocks off into multiple different pieces in order to sling them at enemies, where Katara did the same thing here, but with ice. And again, while it wasn't explicitly said in the animated show, I like how upfront they were with just letting us know that Katara is growing. I'm actually on team liking Katara after these two episodes, I'd say. While she didn't do anything, I think, at all in episode 6, I think just this one scene alone was like, okay, we're kind of getting not only a visual progress of Katara, but we're also hearing it and getting some cool comparisons along the way. So, and I think they also mentioned the pirates here and all that stuff. Or was that in the next one? Either way.
I think in the next one. I just funny to this scene that I don't think she incapacitates anyone with the ice, though.
True.
I think literally every single one of the guys stands right back up and chases them again, which important, not really. It was just something was like, okay, that's kind of funny.
Yeah. And I don't know how you guys felt. I wasn't crazy about them, how Aang just casually brought Sokka and Katara into the spirit world. At first, I was really hoping that they would give us a better reasoning than just it being the environment. Like Aang was saying at the beginning, he's like, I don't know why you guys came with me. I think it was just a very spiritual place. I was hoping that that wouldn't be the case, but it feels like it is. And that is something that, again, it's just if I didn't watch the animated show, I don't know how I'd feel about this. Probably less caring, but it just felt weird that the master of the Avatar state, the only person who can be the bridge between the worlds, can now also, without even touching another person, bridge other people to the spirit world. Kind of ridiculous to me.
I think it's probably a function of time. I mean, do they have enough time in the episode for Katara to have her own separate storyline type of deal? Would be my only devil's advocate thing. But yeah, I mean, it was a little odd just because it's unexpected. I just want to say, I think that the beginning, like these parts of this episode, I think solidified for me that Sokka for sure feels like not my favorite character, but the best representation of his original counterpart out of the three. Just him in the background while Aang's meditating, like all that kind of stuff just felt very Sokka. So he individually is growing on me as the episodes progress.
Definitely. I would say Katara and Sokka for me, but I know Katara is a little bit of a stretch for most people. But I can see it kind of paying off a little bit here, but definitely Sokka.
I was disappointed that all three of them went into the spirit world, because in the animated series, Uncle Iroh is one of the only humans ever to journey into the spirit world.
Right,
and
exactly.
That is kind of part of the Iroh lore and putting some clout on his name. Now, if they're just making humans go to and fro all willy-nilly, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at as well. But at least we can talk about some positives, at least to me, the spirit world. I think the spirit world was honestly really well done. I thought the introduction of all the spirits, and this is what I was kind of talking about at the beginning of the episode, how they kind of blended some storylines. We get Heibei, Wan Shitong, and the Face Sealer all here in this one episode. And honestly, I was happy with it. I thought they did a great job of combining all these characters. While The Library is a fantastic episode in the actual anime, hopefully, fingers crossed, that we potentially still do get it in season two, which I think would make the payoff here in season one better. But overall, Spirits looked amazing. I was actually pretty terrified of some of the spirits that we meet, like the Heibei in his monster form. Yeah, and Ko the Face Stealer. So I want to hear what you guys had to think of these guys.
Yeah, for me, again, detracting from the experience because I know the source material, but right when I saw they were incorporating Ko, I'm like, okay, does that mean we're not going to go into the spirit world when we're in the North Pole? Because that's when he first tangles with Ko. I'm thinking we see Wang Shitong. I'm like, are we going to have the library?
Yeah, are they
already planting the seeds? Check that box. We've already met Wang Shitong. So I'm just unfortunately thinking about what we're going to miss out on later because these plot elements are included here. And the other thing, this is just a broad complaint. Come on, Netflix. No matter if we're in the spirit world, we're in the Earth Kingdom, we're in the Fire Nation, Air Nomads, it's all shot in Canada. It is painfully obvious that all these scenes are being filmed in North America. And part of like the wonder of the Avatar world was all these sweeping landscapes and how culturally distinct all of the different nations looked, even with their settings. They're, like I said, they're landscapes, and every single scene they're running through, what would it be, a deciduous forest? We're in Canada. So it's like, come on. Maybe that's a little nitpicky, but that's kind of what made a show like Game of Thrones so awesome, is every single nation had their own distinct feel. So that's a complaint. Someone take it away.
You're good. I think just to maybe finish that or add on to it, the CGI backgrounds at times I think are really noticeable too. Mm-hmm. And I think like CGI positively, I think that the spirits looked really good. Like the mm-hmm. textures on them as animals and things like that looked really cool and like really detailed and well done. But some of the CGI backgrounds to look odd.
Oh, like straight green screen, kind of like, yeah, 90s. Like
when they were riding Appa at the beginning of this episode, yeah. And Aang and Katara talking to each other. And I was like, ooh, I don't know if I noticed that in the first couple episodes, but it just looked flat like that. So yeah, it's got to just be tough maybe to balance all that. I have no idea.
My roommate also pointed out the tip of Aang's arrow changes from episode to episode on his forehead.
Whoa.
He was I made note of it episode one. I would have to take him at his word, but I'm going to be looking for it now.
Ugh.
And that's
interesting.
So
I'll bring it back.
What you will.
I'll bring it back up with another positive. I think the idea of them mentioning the Mother of Faces here with Ko's story is actually potentially a positive. So in the animated show, just regular Avatar, The Last Airbender, the Mother of Faces, I don't think is ever mentioned. Maybe we get a picture of her, but we learn here that the Mother of Faces is Ko's, the spirit's mom. And why I'm bringing this up is because the Mother of Faces is a character that becomes relevant in Korra, I believe, but where that character is most relevant is in the comics that came out after the show, the animated show, finished. So I'm going to just really quick, I'm sure most people listening know the spoilers, so I'm just going to give them a second. If you're only watching live action and you don't know any spoilers, or give you a second to kind of fast forward a little bit, but I'm just going to bring up a little spoiler content here. 3, 2, 1. All right. The Mother of Faces is actually the one who gave Zuko's mom a whole new identity. So when Zuko becomes Fire Lord, and after Avatar Aang beats Ozai, Zuko goes on this journey to locate his mother, and he finds out that the Mother of Faces gave his mom a whole new identity, wiped her memories clean. So why I'm bringing this all up is essentially, if they actually want to get into Zuko's mom's storyline in the live action, I think that would be something that I would consider a positive, because animated viewers, most of them I imagine, didn't read the comic books and don't know how that storyline played out. So if they want to incorporate that into the live action, I think that would be honestly a good thing, as long as they don't veer too much off of what actually happened or diverge too much off of the story that Avatar The Last Airbender is supposed to be providing us. So yeah,
they've shown some interest in expanding on Zuko as well. So
my ears perked up when they mentioned Mother of Faces, just because I know that's her significance. And while I've been watching the animated version, it's never been brought up. So I like that they potentially leave that open for season 3 or whatever.
Well, speaking of the Mother of Faces draw, was our, I mean, we're probably getting ahead because we're skipping some things, but what was our take, I guess, on his interaction with Roku? It's quite different than it was in the animated show, but
the introduction at first was fine with, like, you know, stand up straight, hop on one leg.
That was
kind of shows a little bit of that child humor that all of these avatars kind of for the most part. Kiyoshi, that obviously skipped her. But when he says friends are a liability, I'm like, that would never be said by Roku in a million years. Yes, again, spoiler alert, you know, he gets betrayed by his best friend, but I still don't think actual Avatar Roku would ever be like, friends are a liability. Like, you can't have friends. That felt weird.
Yeah, my whole thing is, this is the episode Roku says the comet's coming next summer. Mm-hmm. You got to straighten up.
Yes.
This is your destiny. I didn't hear nothing about no comet, but what I did hear is Roku cracking jokes like he never did in the series. And he's this zany, wacky grandpa Roku, which I don't even hate at its core. But if they're completely changing his importance to the story and they're just throwing him a bone with this lame co stole the Mother of Face idol, it's like a neat story. But Roku Aang could do his journey without this all happening. And that's not even to get into the Gyatso of it all, how he's just been hunkered down in the spirit world. And
we could talk,
only
that happens
between these two scenes, because Gyatso refers him to the Fire Nation for Roku's temple. And I guess he finds it from Zuko's notebook, but that was weird too, because Gyatso didn't tell him anything much of substance other than, you know, more than you think, his temple is in the Fire Nation and he once got the best of Ko. Oh gosh, what was the other thing that he told him? Oh, it was just hitting us on the head with a hammer, saying it's not your fault, you couldn't have stopped the firebenders even if you were there, which is kind of giving Aang closure in episode 6 of something in the animated series that gave him grief from start to finish. So what am I supposed to make of all that?
He really doesn't handle all that grief until he meets the guru in the end of season 2, basically, when he's like, you have to, in order to unlock this chakra, you have to get over your grief. And he literally sees all of the airbenders there. So you're right. You're absolutely right that this guy
got through season 2 here.
Very recently.
That's for sure.
So that was my vent session. A lot of that is kind of the crux of, they're just changing some stuff that I really thought was important to the substance in the animated series.
Yeah, I wish they talked a little bit.
Yeah, like you're saying too, there's no talk of this solstice type of stuff. The temple felt pretty good for the most part. You know, we have the guy who helps us. It's to say, I like that they kept where he firebends into the hole in the lamp
100%
and stuff. That was all cool. But yeah, it just was like, okay, this is, I'm really cognizant of how different this is. That's how I felt watching it.
He also just casually walks in through the front doors and is already at the door of where Roku's temple is. It's like, okay, where's the conflict here? We get it eventually, but it's still, he just walks into this Fire Nation building. Just no,
the temple, the temple on the Crescent Island, that was looking pretty good CGI wise for me. Just the lava volcano, it all looked.
All right. Continuing with at least episode 5, just two small buckets that I want to at least touch on is the introduction of June. So Zuko and Iroh not looking for a bounty hunter, but they just come across one who I honestly forgot to write the animal's name down. I'm upset with myself. But I thought June was good. Not much screen time, but did the role as well as she could have. And again, the CGI of her animal looked amazing.
Great casting for June. Something that irked me is Netflix being woke again, and it is June flirting with Iroh instead of Iroh flirting on to June, and she's supposed to rebuff him because she could kick his ass anyway, and it's playful, but they couldn't even keep that in because they didn't want Iroh to
be
seem creepy,
sexist.
Which I get, but it's not the character.
I'm with you. It was weird seeing Iroh in his old age getting some lady action, but
if they wanted to change it, nobody should have been flirting with anyone.
June
did not have to do that, but it was something. I don't know.
But this is actually where
seeing him react to it.
This is actually where they mention they walk into the bar and they're trying not to talk about the Avatar, and then they, it gets brought up, and then like, oh, the Canyon Guide, which that's a great episode too.
What is the other thing? It was the pirates.
It was pirates.
The name drop pirates and canyon crawlers.
Yep. So those were two solid episodes from the show that got referenced.
Still canon.
Here. Yep. Still canon. We'd love to see it. All right. And the last bucket of episode 5 that I want to talk about is just now that we have more Azula and Ozai. How are we feeling about that dynamic, that relationship, and the trio of those two and Zuko as a whole?
Confirmed red firebending for Azula. It's red, people. And I'll even give him a pass because she is a younger Azula and they kind of dissolve into blue. But for me, Azula is supposed to show up in season 2. All we know about her is she's a prodigy. Everything came easy to her. She's better than Zuko in every way, shape, or form. That's all we need to know. All we're seeing right now is Azula struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just doesn't do it for me. I don't feel compelled at all about her character. I think the changes were made for us to have like a sympathetic, empathetic, whatever word you want to use, view on her maybe. Mm-hmm. And I have so much less interest of her, I guess is a better way to say it, as a character than I would if she was guns blazing, like joined in executing the guys who were spies, like all that kind of stuff. It would be like, yeah, you know, type of deal. So,
well, and they even did have her really go into the guy she was sparring with, but I don't know, that just doesn't hit the same. I just, it's not sociopathic. It's a girl that seems to be craving the respect of her father and doesn't quite know how to get it. And I guess that kind of is Azula, but it's not all of Azula.
I'm just not crazy.
It just feels like a miss.
Mm-hmm. It is. Azula's definitely a miss. Ozai for me is 50-50 right now. It could go either way. I'm on that bridge right now of do I like him, do I not? Because the main reason I'm not liking him so far, and it's not the actor's fault at all. It's just, again, the praise that he's giving Zuko, I don't understand if it's meant to better Azula, to make her stronger, or if it's just him actually praising Zuko. It's so
totally
confusing.
Not the second one.
Yeah,
it's 100% him getting underneath her skin about it.
But it's just so terrible to see, because Azula, again, like we've been talking about, is just better than that. It just feels like she shouldn't be getting that kind of comparison to Zuko. It's just weird.
In these two episodes, Dave, I was more aligned with your thinking of maybe Ozai is a little bit more sympathetic to Zuko than he was in the animated series. And we get a lot more of it in episode 6
yes.
when they kind of flesh out the whole backstory
that
of Zuko's helped. Scar.
That helped for me.
It seems like the whole time Ozai isn't, like, there is kind of a mental gymnastics sort of fatherly care in Ozai, whereas in the animated series, it was just, you are weak, I will show you, you're banished. And that was 2 + 2 = 4. In this, it's a little bit more nuanced, and he does seem a little bit more sympathetic, which I don't hate. I think I just don't like Azula's character. I kind of hate, too.
I just think it's, again, maybe it adds an extra dimension to him, but is it the correct dimension? Do we need that dimension in the show? I feel like he's better almost being this character, almost, I mean, if
brutal.
You call it like a caricature of a villain, he's so straight up, he's so rigid in his ways. He only respects strength and that kind of stuff. And
for sure,
it just feels better that way.
It's just unfortunate because two characters that whenever I would see them on the screen in the animated show, I would always, you know, ears up, you know, edge of my seat.
For
I'm just
sure.
so ready for the content. But here, I feel that way for Ozai, I will say, because I guess we still haven't quite gotten enough of him where I don't feel totally there to throw away Ozai. But Azula is just not doing it for me, man. When she comes up on the screen, I'm like, I could care less, honestly, about what is about to happen to her.
And they feel like characters where, yeah, maybe you can make changes in an adaptation like this, but they have to land and they have to make sense. And I just feel like they're kind of neither of those things. It's okay to try to maybe give us a different view on a potential quality that maybe the animated series poked around but didn't give us a ton of. So you want to flesh that type of stuff out, but it just feels like they're not actually the same characters.
Mm-hmm.
It also added to how big and bad you just knew that they were by the fact that Ozai was a silhouette every time he was shown in a flashback in season one, and Azula was only really name dropped between Iroh and Zuko when they in passing said, oh, your sister did this or that. So
yeah, that's a fantastic point that season one, the Fire Nation feels like this like evil empire of like really strong benders. And here we have this like sympathetic view of them and stuff. And they have a little like family dynamic that isn't great. And they don't feel like this like crushing military force at all.
It feels like there's like the possibility of Ozai and Zuko just being best friends by the end of the series is like a possibility because of how they've been introducing like, these characters. And it's like, it's not.
I don't know. And maybe I'm looking at it like remembering through rose colored glasses, and the Fire Nation isn't depicted like that in the show so much, but
up to the North Pole with 100 military ships and just start raining fireballs down onto an innocent village. I know, but it's just like, no, they are brutal though. They are saying.
They don't feel like this like relentless war machine in this show right now.
And again, that might be due to the lacking of like these side quests that they go on, where we're introduced to these random gangs of firebender. Like there's one group that all ride the rhinoceroses, right? And they each have a master of their different weapons. And, you know, even Iroh is able to recognize them like, oh, not only are they really strong firebenders, they're, you know, a great singing group too. But like we get so many more firebenders introduced by this point that are all terrible people. And that I feel like helps with that vibe that you're missing out on. But
so I think we've gotten some of episode 6 already. Completely go there. We kind of brush past Katara and Sokka's visions in the spirit world. Katara is a copy paste from the animated series. It is how her mom dies. And I actually think that hit and landed pretty well for me, especially really seeing her get incinerated. That is what it would have been for Katara. So thumbs up for me there. Sokka's was added for the show and
I liked it a lot.
It really was good, but at the same time, he never really failed as a warrior yet. He was just too young, and the plot point was he didn't get to have that experience because his dad had already left for war, so he does it with Bato. Whereas this, it happened, and he failed, and his dad kind of gave him platitudes. So it kind of adds more to his aspirations to be a warrior and please his dad, but I'm not sure I like it because that's his only dimension as a character.
That's fair. I guess I'm saying I like it because this was one of these two scenes were the scenes where like I felt real like emotional weight and like connection to the characters where I was like, oh my God, it's eliciting emotion out of me type of deal. So I see exactly what you're saying, the why you wouldn't like it. I think this was like, oh my God, the show is making me feel something. I enjoy this.
I just felt that I couldn't tell if it was just a vision or if it actually happened because it just felt like Sokka's dad would never actually say something like that, also, even when Sokka is not in the room. I just felt like his dad would never say that. So I thought it was something like Ko was twisting the backstory a little bit to kind of make Sokka feel even worse about him passing that. We'll see though. Maybe we get a little bit more delved into it, but I just have a hard time believing that his dad would actually say something like that against Sokka's back, even when Sokka's not in the room.
My final comment on this is that I think it was hilarious that Sokka was like, he was almost kind of flirting with the fox.
Oh, yeah.
Like they were, they were kind of flirting with each other, which was just kind of funny to me.
I like that.
It looks like they're flirting because he's a real person on the screen versus in the cartoon. I don't know.
And it's kind of an homage to the animated show because in the Wan Chitong Library episode, he is told that, oh, there's these knowledge seekers of the library, you know, they're foxes. And Sokka's like, oh, like they're real sexy women. And Katara's like, no, like they're actual foxes, you know. So I think that kind of plays into that dynamic a little bit. But let's get into episode 6 here. We already kind of talked enough about Aang arriving at the temple, so we don't really need to cover much more. The only thing I'll say is I would have loved to see Roku take over his body and get Aang out of the Fire Nation.
Oh, like
we saw with
boy,
Kyoshi.
Would I? Yeah. Well, to be fair, they used that to get June into the story, and thus Aang is captured and tied up and given to Zuko. At the end of episode 5, I believe Zhao receives word of his promotion along with the archers, which I'm glad they included in these episodes. Mm-hmm. But when Zuko gets Aang from June, Zhao intercepts and essentially just says, hey,
I'm the big dick admiral now. This is happening.
This was the most Zhao feeling episode so far. Unfortunately, I know my roommates, Luke and Alki, have already finished it, so I know what their full thoughts are on Zhao by the end of the season, but I'm not going to say I like his character, but I will say this episode was good for the live action's version of him, made him feel a little bit more menacing and threatening rather than a little baby back biatch.
He feels like the best, like the most successful version of the line that they're trying to toe between the seriousness and the comedy. His comedy beats hit, I think, better almost than anyone. Maybe Sokka's probably the funniest still, but then his serious stuff is still good too. He feels good to me, the character.
Mm-hmm. He does, despite all their changes. I almost don't like what it does to Azula, their whole relationship in the live action, but I don't mind what it has done to Zhao. I thought it was an interesting choice. The show is intentionally making him comic relief, like what you said, Kyle. And when we finally get to the prison that he locks Aang up into, he's like correcting the notes that are going to the Fire Lord. No, it's four guards. And all of the Fire Nation soldiers in that prison gave me Stormtrooper vibes because they were all incompetent. They were all partying, getting caught up in the moment, I guess. But Kyle, you were kind of saying it earlier. The Fire Nation doesn't have that ruthless feel from top to bottom. They're supposed to be the evil empire, and their foot soldiers are not showing it for me.
Let's just talk about the mask, baby, the blue spirit. This,
woo,
I think, hit really well in the live action. I thought the fights that the blue spirit had were very badass, to be honest. Like, you could kind of see the CGI a little bit for some of the moves, but I think it only helped bolster the feeling of how badass the blue spirit is.
I agree. I'm thinking of that scene atop the battlements where he has the stance too, when he's like leaping up. It looked great, and I was shocked that they even went for the ladder scene.
Yes, me
but they too. Went for it, and it looked great. So credit where credit's due. I think this whole prison escape for me was a big thumbs up.
Mm-hmm. I just want that mask so bad. I want it hanging in my room, man. That's such
with some twin swords below.
Oh, it's so iconic. That and the sword combo is just so great. But
the way that he takes out the guards two at a time also felt very true to the series, kind of like, again, with this serious funny note where like there's two guards just go out, get their butt kicked, and then two more guards go out and get their butt kicked, and the last two guys are looking at each other like, what the heck's going on, type of
thing. Yeah,
that felt like the animated story come to life.
Definitely. Any final comments on the blue spirit? I know we could probably talk a lot more, but just overall, well, great one-to-one, I thought.
Yeah, great one-to-one. And then that takes us to an example of straying from the one-to-one, which is this very stretched out conversation between Aang and Zuko, where in the animated series, Zuko's shooting on sight, dude. Right when Aang's like, we could be friends, boom, fire blast, Aang's out of there. But he is forced to listen, and they kind of develop a slight friendship. Zuko eventually does kind of give in to his question, you know, a rabbit or goat hair, I could never get my calligraphy. So they kind of do have this bond, and then compassion winds up being the trigger word. And that kind of takes us into the Agni Kai with his father flashback that we've already talked about. But I don't know. At this point in the series, I just think Zuko is supposed to still be shooting on sight and wouldn't even entertain that conversation.
I agree. When he answers the question, I was a little disappointed. I did not want him to actually answer Aang's question about the goat hair or whatever hair, because if he does answer it, that lends himself to being more friends with the Avatar, which he shouldn't be at this point. I think when he asks the question and there's that long pause, I think Zuko either should have shot on sight. Aang maybe mentions compassion while there's a long pause there, but I don't think Zuko should have answered the question personally. That kind of actually got under my skin a little bit more than it needed it to, because I'm just sitting there, I'm like, this conversation's too long. Zuko is getting too close to the Avatar. Like, we get that in the animated show, Aang does ask that question, you know, 100 years ago, would we still be friends? Here, it's a whole conversation, and that just builds a little bit more, builds too much of a building block for me in their relationship going forward.
Yeah, I don't know the exact right way to phrase this, but it feels like a negative consequence of knowing how the story goes, where they're obviously aware that Zuko and Aang become friends, so they're trying to plant that seed very explicitly at some point, and I don't think it needed to be planted so obviously.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Aang is extending all of this compassion and they have this friendly moment type of deal. I understand why it's there. It's just, yeah, I agree that probably wasn't entirely necessary.
Okay, to finish up episode 6 talk, we're just going to talk about all of Zuko's backstory here from the war meeting all the way up until the dreaded Agni Kai. So I know I have some thoughts on this, and I know Kyle has some thoughts on it. So let's start with Kyle and what you were feeling during all of this backstory for Zuko.
It's just such a mixture of emotions, I guess. I think that Zuko's actor does a good job of acting Zuko. It's just, again, it's an extension of this Ozai stuff. It just doesn't feel... He doesn't feel like this supremely powerful, autocratic, just like one-track minded, driven, just purely evil guy, you know, like we've just mentioned. And again, and too, like the War Council meeting with like the general, it's very obvious that I'm watching a Netflix show. They are not, like we're saying, this like just war machine unit. I don't know. The scale of things feels tiny. It just doesn't feel right, I guess, is the basic way to say what I'm feeling.
I'll say the, like, Zuko floundering at the meeting at first was fine. And then him calling out the general or whoever for it being a terrible plan was all fine. I know you love this quote. It just did not hit at all.
It literally hit like a wet fart when there's only one way to settle this, Agni Kai. And it was like, oh God. Like,
that was just
there was just, I don't know. I the moment itself, when you think about it on paper, yeah, this feels like a good chance to introduce Agni Kai. And we talked about it because they skipped the Zuko Zhao Agni Kai. Mm-hmm. So this would be like the spot to do it. And it's just like Agni Kai. And
it's like, what's that? And it's like, okay, you're two guys throwing fists.
Just wasn't it.
The line definitely hit like a wet fart. I mean, it was just, again, I'm not blaming Ozai's actor because I think he looks great. And when he takes his cape off or whatever in during the Agni Kai, I was like, whoa, mama, that's a hot man right there.
Yeah, he looks.
And he looks the part, but the lines that were just, when he says Agni Kai, I'm like, it felt like this was just directed at, you know, animated show check. Watchers, because it's like, yeah, here we go, you got your check, and it's like, it didn't feel like a good check. If they wanted to develop it a little bit more and then make it a little bit more intense, but it's just, it happens, he calls out Zuko, and he's like, all right, Agni Kai, and it's like, what is it, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah,
not a, and that brings us to the Agni Kai itself, which I don't remember Zuko fighting back, much less getting the better of Ozai.
Yeah, that's
what
the
hell is happening? Yeah. He is supposed to bow down in tears and be like, no, I'm not fighting you, not fighting you. I will show you your weakness. Boom, take this scar. Get the fuck out of the Fire Nation.
I think the fight itself was actually pretty good.
Well, yeah, I mean, we
it
all
it shouldn't have existed,
kick.
But yeah,
the fire axe looks so hot. I love, kicks. Yeah, the fire axe kicks are so good. I think I'm fine with them sparring a little as long as Zuko doesn't get the upper hand at all. If it's just a minute of Ozai kicking Zuko's ass and then finishing him off with a burn, great. But how is a 14-year-old Zuko one-upping the Fire Lord in this scenario?
I'll tell you how. He isn't. The reason they're sparring here in this Agni Kai is because the Agni Kai against Zhao never happened. So they had to show two people fighting mano a mano to show the audience what an Agni Kai is, even though it just is completely at the expense of the substance of Zuko and his father's relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't like it a whole lot. I will end with a positive. The sinister nature with which he burned his eye and just had the fireball in his fingers and just slowly pressed it, that hit.
And I will say, I think the conversation between Ozai and Zuko in the bedroom or whatever was honestly, that hit for me a little bit, to be honest. It put more pressure on Zuko's character, something that I hadn't really been feeling throughout the series. And now we're seeing that his father does actually just view Zuko as weak, and it's not this whole, oh, like, I like Zuko, but I also hate him. It's like, in this scene, it's direct that Zuko, you are weak because of your compassion. You need to go and capture the Avatar. Like, that scene honestly hit for me more than any other Ozai scene. And I'm sure a lot of people would disagree with me, but I felt like that scene was almost necessary for their relationship. But that's just me.
Well, it wasn't necessary in the animated series, so...
Yeah.
Now, that just goes along with, it seems Ozai is a little bit more sympathetic to Zuko. I got the impression from the animated, after that Agni Kai, they, like, probably didn't see each other again until... You know, the next time they see each other,
he literally says
banishment.
In the animated show, I haven't seen my dad since the day he burned my face, basically.
Exactly,
or like since the Agni Kai specifically. It's not any conversations there. It's just that.
And I think it wasn't as emphasized in this live action how impossible a feat capturing the Avatar is supposed to be portrayed. It almost seemed like he was talking it up like, you will rise to the occasion and come back a stronger man to me and earn the right to be the heir.
Yes.
Like, he genuinely intended for Zuko to go out and reclaim his honor, whereas in the animated series, it was a fool's errand. Yeah, like, exactly. Here, this will keep you busy for the rest of your life.
Completely agree. The last positive I'll end with is I did feel a little emotional with Zuko returning to the ship. I've actually come to really like G's character. I forget what his title is, but G actually has been kind of a surprise for me, in a character that I didn't really care for in the animated show, but I'm now finding myself wanting him and Zuko to kind of have a sturdy relationship going forward. And it was cool seeing Zuko come back and Iroh lay down. I think Iroh has actually been doing pretty well these past two episodes. Iroh coming in and saying, hey, G, like, Zuko's had it rough, laying out the backstory. G kind of understanding that Zuko made a sacrifice for his 41st Division, whatever it was called. And yeah,
mm-hmm. That's a positive addition for sure.
That hit. And the fact that he comes back to the ship and they all greet him and bow, that I kind of got a little emotional there, to be honest.
But that's, you know, yeah. I agree. The 41st is his ship crew. I think that was a great inclusion. I guess a little bit of a side tangent. You know what? I finally figured out what I'm comparing the change between animated Iroh to live action Iroh. It's like going from Dumbledore in the Sorcerer's Stone movie to kind of the younger, more able to do the physical acting of Dumbledore in, I don't know, the subsequent films after the older guy died after Sorcerer's Stone. It's kind of a more serious Iroh at the expense of his lighthearted goofiness and kooky wisdom. So it's the scales, but overall, I think this adaptation of Iroh is working for me 6 episodes in.
I like his quote when Zuko wakes up and he's like, oh, you don't worry, you still got your vision. That means you can just look at this pretty mug still. And I like that quote. That felt kind of Iroh-esque, but
that did feel very Iroh-esque, especially he's very aware of the tension.
Yes, and he's trying to break
trying, it. Yes, to play that role, which is very Iroh.
I also liked I think he is a narration at the beginning of this episode and ties it together at the end. That's kind of a Iroh wisdom moment. But the one I really liked is when it's him, Zuko, and June, and Zuko is turning his nose up at hiring a mercenary. And Iroh's like, hey, listen, Zhao is already casting his die and we have yet to pick up our tiles. That was like a very much an Iroh metaphor, nice. Delivered a little bit more seriously, but I liked it.
Yeah, and using the game, you know, the example of a game to teach Zuko a lesson.
Yes,
literally Iroh.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah, I agree.
All righty. 5 and 6. Any final thoughts from you guys as we wrap this up?
We're almost done.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I guess this is...
I'm not at a hate watching point, but I'm so interested to see the finale. Episode 7 will be episode 7, but how will this finale look? I am quite curious, to be honest.
Zhao plays such a crucial role in the invasion of the North Pole, and I'm not sure what this Zhao can possibly bring to the table. We have also gone through the Ko storyline in the spirit world, so is Aang even going to go back to the spirit world, which would then eliminate that whole plot line of Zuko taking him into the tundra. There are just so many things that I don't think they're going to be able to hit in the North Pole. So I'm anticipating myself for a very devastating blow.
You're right. Like, how is Zhao going to get to the North Pole? Because in the animated show, we know that he went to this library, found the secret to waterbending, essentially. And at that point, we had already known Zhao to be a very competent and competent adversary for the gang. Yet here in the show, he's not that smart. It feels like he definitely has not visited this library that I'm referring to find out this information. So, like, what is going to compel him to want to go to the north?
That,
and how is he going to try and beat the waterbenders without that knowledge of what we know?
That's not necessarily true, because I think they just show us in the animated a quick flashback of him in the library.
No, he mentions that in season one, just saying, I found, because Iroh's like, oh, you don't want to fight the water tribe. It's about to be a full moon. And he's like, oh, don't worry about the full moon. Like, I visited this library and I've got the moon under control.
Oh, yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. They could still, next episode, show that flashback.
I guess, so, Okay, I see what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah, so obviously, as the second to last episode, it's going to do some setup and some chess piece moving. So this is Captain Obvious take, but episode 7 is obviously quite important for what happens in episode 8. So yeah. I feel like we'll almost know after we watch episode 7 of how we'll feel about 8.
Kyle, don't you mean pie show chip moving?
There you go. Yes. Yes, yeah. I do, actually. Thank you, Uncle Iroh.
And to finish up what I was talking about at the beginning of the episode with how we're going to tackle now that it's been greenlit for the next 2 seasons, let's just say we haven't been over the moon about this live action. So there will be less recordings of future seasons going on. We'll potentially, depending, I guess, on how season 2 starts, we'll probably just do a whole season recap after it's been aired, rather than just do it 2 at a time. Because again,
we got a while though.
Yeah, it just feels like it's not entirely necessary for us to do these 2 episode breakdowns for a show that we already know so well, and we can just kind of complain in one season recap episode.
Yeah,
maybe it's good.
Yeah.
Odds Aang shows interest in learning waterbending while in the North Pole.
12%.
12%?
Yeah.
What's going to be annoying too is if they probably even won't go this route, because the waterbender is misogynistic. But I was thinking, like, he's going to get to the North Pole and he's just not even going to want to learn waterbending because this guy's going to be a misogynist. And he's just it's going to be another episode of him delaying waterbending, and then he's just going to master it in the season finale. But they're definitely not going that route.
I mean, do you think he becomes, you know, the big, like, water?
He has to. If he doesn't, well, okay.
He's trying to soften the blow. No, he has to, Dave.
No, he doesn't have to.
We literally said that about Azula's
Nyctalan.
One thing I'll say with knowing,
say that, didn't I?
The one thing I'll say, if they want to, the only way I'm okay with them veering off the giant fish is if they do what they did with Kyoshi in episode 2. It's the water bending master that was before him. Yeah, him. Like, if he were to overtake his body in that scene, like, I think that would be the only way. They can
see.
Yeah, we can see.
We'll overtake that body and become a giant fish. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, option 1 is definitely fish. Option 2 would be, I would want him to be reincarnated as the water avatar.
Do you think we get the iconic Iroh quote?
Unfortunately know that we don't. That we do.
Oh, okay. You know. Well, that's good. That's good.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's the good delivery may be lacking. It's the accent. That's fine.
I mean, I'll be looking for it, so that'll keep me going.
Have you seen the line delivery already?
I have not, but Luke has told me the line.
I don't want to know.
Okay. All right. That's going to be it for today's episode coverage of Avatar The Last Airbender. If you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow at all of our socials at Bingetown TV on X, Insta, YouTube, and all of that. Be sure to check out our Discord and chat with us about anything that you're watching with us or anything that you're watching separately. We're always looking for recommendations on shows. Lastly, for our podcast catalog, just check out BingetownTV.com. That's going to have a nice organized list of every recording that we've ever done, alphabetical, so you'll be able to find anything that you like there. And if I didn't say it enough, once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thank you for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.